The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to First Bite, the Pride of Detroit midweek podcast. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I am the editor-in-chief over at Pride of Detroit. We are back with First Bite episodes because we are starting a very new kind of series of podcasts where we're getting to know the Detroit Lions 2021 NFL draft class. With me co-hosting this episode of First Bite is Chris Perfett, the adequate
Hello.
Host of the BOD cast. How you doing, buddy?
Hello, we're doing all right. We are in, I think the post-draft glow has finally worn off a bit, and we had a very busy week, but we'll talk about some of that news on an upcoming podcast. For now, I want to talk about Sewell. I want to get it all up in Sewell right now.
Yes, we're going to obviously start at the very beginning of the draft. The Lions taking Oregon offensive tackle Penei Sewell with the 7th overall pick. So to help us break down everything about him, his game, his personality, his family, everything we can get to know of him, we brought on the show today Tyson Alger from The Athletic covering the Oregon Ducks. Tyson, how are you doing today, man?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I want to jump right into this because I think Penei Sewell's got a fascinating story, and it really starts with him landing. Well, it can go all the way back into his childhood, but I want to start with his career at Oregon, because a 17-year-old landing at Oregon, never playing a snap at left tackle, suddenly comes in and immediately takes a starting job. How does that happen?
Well, what's even crazier about that too is the guy that he beat out for that job was I think essentially a fourth year player. So it wasn't like he beat out another just a young guy. Like he came in and beat out a guy that the Ducks expected to be the starter that year. And so like a little bit of the backstory, like when Mario Cristobal came in, like the big focus for Oregon was to just retool in the trenches. He's with former offensive line coach. He just started bringing in these absolutely monster bodies into Oregon, and Sewell was kind of like his first, like, this is the prototype of like what I want to do with this line. And they were able to get him over Alabama, which was a pretty big thing like around here. And he comes in, it wasn't like he enrolled early. He didn't come in during the spring. He came in during like the normal summer period, and within about like 6 weeks, like just came in and just straight up won that position. And then it wasn't one of those things either where it was even that close. Like there wasn't like drama in the locker room of this 17-year-old coming in and beating out a veteran for that spot. It was just Sewell just kind of came in, and their longtime family motto has always been Sewells don't sit on the bench. And he never did at Oregon.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We talked to Coach Cristobal ourselves, and he mentioned Shane Lemieux specifically coming down and knocking on his door and saying, like, I need to play next to Penei Sewell. He needs to start right away, which, I mean, that's just insane for me. And he was a veteran at the time, I believe, too.
Those 2 years of Sewell on that offensive line, that was an offensive line that ended up putting, I believe, 3 other guys into the NFL. And like, that was a pretty darn veteran group that had played a lot of snaps with each other already up to that point. And so for him to just kind of like come in there and win that respect right away, like, I think that set not only like a precedent for like, if you're good enough, you're going to play, but also just like that kind of general respect in the locker room of the guy, like, Oregon's recruited out of its mind since Cristobal came in, and they've really kind of just created an atmosphere where any player can contribute no matter the age. There's not really like that hierarchy to it.
Speaking of that recruiting, like, I was watching him like choke slam a kid in high school just to control that offensive line. So like, Was it that kind of meanness that really won him the job? Or, I mean, I want to ask soon about kind of the scheme fit because I watched how Oregon really used him. But what made him so enticing to start on that offensive line when he was that young? Was it the size? Was it the scheme fit? What was it?
The size was definitely something. I mean, like, he came in, I believe he was about, I think when he came to Oregon, he was like 345, and they actually kind of chiseled him down a little bit from that over career, but just incredibly physical and agile too, because they do like to scheme their players up to get those blockers out in space. If you go back and like one of his like top highlights that I was seeing on Twitter throughout the draft was a play where he just blew up this, I believe it was an Auburn linebacker, kind of like on a swing play out to the left. And like, that's the type of thing that like just he doesn't give up on plays like that. So not only would he be blowing up that guy, but then he would be looking like he's pretty aggressive like that. He likes to kind of like throw his weight around there, which is kind of funny because he's a very kind of happy-go-lucky kind of jokester like off the field. But like, he just puts those blinders on when he's out there. And that was kind of day one from them. When Cristobal first kind of started recruiting Sewell, like the first thing he wanted, it was at a camp, and instead of talking, like the first thing he wanted to do was just put him through drills, just like get that hands-on sort of thing. And it was kind of like that impression was set from there of like, okay, this kid's like incredibly young, but he's going to be ready right away.
How early in his Oregon career was it clear to you that he was something, you know, beyond just a special college player, someone that could be potentially someone going in the top 10? Was it clear the minute he stepped on the field at the beginning of his freshman year, or did it take a little bit of time?
It was basically like the first game was a little bit of like that aura of like, oh, who's this like young kid that's starting? He was the first true freshman left tackle to start at Oregon in 20 years. And by week two, it was pretty evident he was the best player on that offense outside of Justin Herbert. Like it, wow. And it's always kind of hard to like judge, you know, necessarily like judge the offensive line over the course of like a couple games. But like, there was so much attention on him because he was so young, and he was kind of like the prototype of what Cristobal wanted to turn this team into. Like, he was just really good from the start, and he only played in, I think it was 6 or 7 games that first year.
Right.
And I mean, I know he won the Outland Trophy the next year, but he wasn't that much better as a sophomore than he was those first 6 games as a freshman.
Yeah. I believe he was named freshman All-American despite playing half a season.
So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, you mentioned that scheme fit. I've seen some of his tape where Oregon seemed to really like to run those, you know, bubble screens where he could really set up for, and some sweeps to really get out there. And he could really, you know, what makes him so good on, and what kind of plays was Oregon really running that really spoke to Penei Sewell's strengths?
You know, whenever I would ask Oregon's offensive line coach Alex Mirabal about it, he would just say like that his ability to like sense like the extra step, you know, like not only like picking up that first block, but then, you know, getting rid of that guy and sensing like that extra move downfield. And so like with a lot of those bubble screens or like getting plays out in space, like you would often see Sewell not only picking up the first guy, but then moving on to the second guy and continuing downfield. There was one play, it was his freshman year. I guess it would have been his third game. They were playing Stanford, and they ran a little bubble screen out to Jalen Red on the left. And Sewell ended up basically tying him down. Like he grabbed a guy at around like the 25 and pushed him all the way out of the end zone from there. Just aged the whole time. And like, was almost like running the same speed as like their slot receiver, like down the field. It was just nuts. And that's the type of thing that like just Oregon, I've been covering them since like the Marcus Mariota era, where it was just like speed and flash and everything. And like the fact that like Oregon has somehow like gotten into just like being physical and like getting like joy out of that as a fandom has been quite the transformation over like the last decade or so.
I've kind of gotten a sense watching some Oregon film over the past couple of years that it almost seems like they've tailored the offense a little bit to Penei Sewell. Like they're running those wide plays because they know Penei Sewell can use that speed. Is that a sense that you got to, like, literally? I mean, you don't normally think of an offense being built around a left tackle, but that's kind of the sense I got watching some of their film.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, how shocked were people last year when Justin Herbert did what he did with the Chargers? And that was just because he played in an offense at Oregon that was incredibly efficient, but they just didn't really need to have him do what he did for the Chargers this last year, because they were so confident in that offensive line where running the ball was a priority, getting like those like high percentage plays were a priority, just because they were so efficient at being able to do that. They didn't have to take those type of shots just because Sewell could get them 5 yards every play if they wanted to, you know?
Yeah. And then I also, let's talk a little bit more about him as a person, because I mean, I've already had a couple of Zoom conferences with him, and I came out just smiling ear to ear because he's such an infectious personality. He's very turned. Yeah. Let's start off with any like personal stories, I guess, that you have. If you had any personal interactions, obviously a lot of interactions have been virtual in the past year or two, but I'm just curious as to your experiences with him.
I think probably like my favorite personal interaction with him was probably after the 2019 Pac-12 championship game, when Oregon was actually a pretty big underdog to Utah, and then the Ducks just, you know, beat them pretty handily. And he was playing against his older brother, Nephi Sewell, who was playing for Utah. And like family, I mean, you guys have talked to him, like family is like such a, like a center part of like what they do. I mean, they moved from America Samoa just for basically like this opportunity, and to like see him go from like, the clock ticked down, Oregon's going to the Rose Bowl, and like the first thing Sewell does is make a beeline to his brother, and they just wrap into like a bear hug at the 50 yard line. Like tears are coming down both of them, and they both wear a ton of eye black too, so it's just like all streaky through there. And then we get open locker rooms after the Pac-12 after the conference title of the game, so I really wanted to talk to Sewell about that, and he had already transitioned from like the emotional, like, you know, brother thing to like that turnt, like Penny Sewell. Like he caught a pass in that game, like he caught a screen pass in that game, and I think like he and I talked about that for about 5-6 minutes of like, you know, how he just didn't like the read that he was getting, and as soon as he saw a linebacker come towards him, he planted and he's like, I'm done, I'm out of there. But then but just like kind of being able to get like that whole kind of like wrapping of like, you get like the family aspect, and then just like a kid that like really loves playing football, that I mean, like that was kind of like my microcosm of Sewell in one game there.
Did you see that kind of attitude kind of like infect the rest of the locker room, or was it kind of, was that kind of shared across the offensive line, or did that come from him, or was that just kind of something everyone really vibed with?
You know, that's an interesting question, because like, I don't think like Sewell needed like any sort of like energy from anybody else to get going. But like that year of an Oregon team just had like a lot of characters like that it was kind of like natural, like their middle linebacker Troy Dye, who's with the Vikings now. I mean, he was a very similar personality of, you know, between the third and fourth quarter, they always play Shout on the stadium speakers, and like Dye would always be essentially like breakdancing at like the 50 yard line as it's happening. it's a fun era a fun era for Oregon football with a lot of personalities, and Sewell's just kind of blended right in because he was a guy that like to have fun, but as soon as you got between the lines, like that was a pretty relentless football team that they had.
Let's talk about last year a little bit. Obviously Sewell opts out. We'll get to maybe your impressions on why that happened and all that, but I'm curious as to what the football team looked without him. I'm not sure who his replacement was at left tackle, but was it clear that they were missing him out there?
So the guy that replaced Sewell at left tackle was the guy that Sewell beat out for that position. Mm-hmm. 2 years earlier, but he ended up, so he's coming back now for his seventh year of eligibility.
Wow.
He's George Moore IV. He's 24. And which is, you know, Sewell's now in the NFL at 20. It's just kind of a funny how people develop at different speeds, you know. But Oregon, if things were to happen normal last year, Oregon had a chance at being an above average to like a very good football team, if Sewell would have been the anchor of an offensive line that was replacing everybody else along it. Like you're losing four starters, but you have the Outland Trophy winner. Like, you know, maybe we can do something there. And then you have a new quarterback too. Then you lose Sewell, you have five new starters, and Oregon's offensive line wasn't a liability for them last year, but for 3 years it had been like their number one strength. And then you go from that to just kind of an average position with a new quarterback, with a new offensive coordinator. They weren't really able to like practice fully and like actually like work on their physicality just because of COVID stuff. Like it was just a weird year. Like and even like looking back on that season, you know, they made it to the Fiesta Bowl, but I don't really have any like glaring memories from like this last season, because it just didn't feel like a legitimate season.
Yeah.
on the Pac-12 end anyways. I mean, like right. The rest of the country
kind of stuff together. Kind of hard to get a full season outlook with only like five games or whatever it was. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's what happened with Oregon's quarterback. Like Tyler Shuck played pretty good for them for the first month. And then like he went through a slump, but if you only have seven games, like two games of a slump's a 30-year season. And so,
right. Yeah. I mean, that's fascinating. Cause like, we'll get into it at some point talking about some of the other picks, but like, it was a pretty heavy Pac-12 class for the Detroit Lions. They get Jamar Jefferson, they get Sewell, they get Onzarike out of Washington, Amon Ra St. Brown out of SC. Like obviously some of these guys opted out, but they clearly didn't see the shortened season as a detriment to whatever tape they needed.
Well, and I feel like that's like was just like a such a like the Pac-12's been essentially a national punchline for the last, you know,
oh god, like people aren't even talking about them as a Power Five anymore.
And they had like a pretty good class of players that were coming out of that last year, and it's just like, of course they weren't able to showcase them. Like it's just
All right, well, before we head to our first break, I want to get into the opt-out decision a little bit there. Obviously I think people will obviously the Lions have forgiven that because their first two draft picks opted out. But I'm just curious as if you have any sort of insight into why that happened, if, you know, there was any regret there when the Pac-12 decided to kind of reverse their decision to end the season. So, do you have any insight to Sewell's decision there?
Yeah, he really wanted to play. Like Penix Sewell wants to play football. You know, like if there's any misconception out there of like this kid, like wanting to take the year off, like that's completely insane. So like basically what happened with them is it got to August, and at this point the Pac-12 had rescheduled to a conference only schedule. Then they canceled the whole season, and then like a month and a half later then they decided to bring it back. In that month and a half there was like no communication from anybody, like anywhere. Like it wasn't just like coaches that didn't know what was going on, players didn't know what's going on, parents didn't know what was going on. And like for the Sewells, like They love college. They love the Oregon Ducks, but like they also are very aware that like he was a first round talent. He was a top 10 talent, and they haven't been in this position before. And in August, nobody really even knew if at that point they were talking about playing the season in January. And so I think it was just one of those things of like, do I want to stay here and be in like a holding pattern and maybe just like completely lose out on like. It made sense for them. They were frustrated. And even after like Oregon's second game, like Penny was at home watching with his dad, and like he was like had his dad like go through and look up like how he could potentially opt back in, like to like go through the paperwork steps. Like he wanted to play, and it was disappointing, but ultimately they know what they made the decision what they thought was best at the time, which to be fair, like the Pac-12 wasn't helping them out at all.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about Penei Sewell here with Tyson Alger from The Athletic, get into how he projects with the Lions in the NFL. So stick with us. We'll be right back on First Bite. And we are back here on First Bite talking Penei Sewell with Tyson Alger from The Athletic. Tyson, let's get into maybe a little bit of your projections, put on your scouting hat here a little bit and talk about some strengths and weaknesses of Sewell's game. And let's just start there with arm length. I don't know if you really want to talk too much about arm length, but I guess that's one of the quote unquote concerns with him, is that maybe a tiny bit undersized. Do you have any concern about that affecting his game at the pro level?
Not really. Just from the fact that like he is one so strong, and then two, like he's an incredibly like flexible and like has great reflexes. So like he is able to, just because of like his physical makeup, although I guess we are talking about a deficiency of his physical makeup, but he's able to kind of work around that just because of like how good of an athlete he is. I mean, like he does, you know, he is still young in his development and can definitely probably work on some technical things, but like he's been able to get by so much on just like how quickly he reacts and that kind of speed that it wasn't an issue at the college level. You guys follow the NFL probably a little bit closer than we do over here on the college side, but it certainly wasn't a problem for him at Oregon.
Yeah, that kind of criticism coming out of the Bengals was very weird. Like, I didn't understand the short. It felt like they were just trying to make an excuse, Jeremy, on why they shouldn't take him.
Maybe. But I do think Tyson brings up an interesting point that maybe we don't talk about much. And it's the fact that, you know, Penei Sewell played, what, 16 games in college? It's not a ton. Mm-hmm.
It was like six his first year, and then I guess it was like 14. So he played like 20 games total, and all of those were as a below 20-year-old.
Yeah. So there's probably, in terms of the technical side, some things to work on. Is there anything in particular that you saw, whether it's hand usage, footwork, anything like that, that needs at least a little bit of tweaking? Because, I mean, I don't know. He looks pretty clean on tape.
I mean, like, we can sit here and pick nits, you know? That's one thing that they did kind of talk about, like, his progressive development at Oregon was just some of, like, you know, the hand and foot movement and that sort of positioning and just, like, stuff you learn as you, like, you're in a system longer. But he's exponentially better than any offensive lineman I've ever covered at Oregon. That it's just hard for me to really handicap that one for you.
That's fair. I want to ask a little bit about your thoughts on him moving to right tackle. Obviously he came into Oregon and just killed it at left tackle right away. So I'm assuming your answer is no here, but do you have any concern about him just sliding over to right tackle and making an impact right away?
His freshman year, I did a profile sit down interview with him. It was, I think, after like week four, and I was asking him about playing left tackle because he had never played that before. And he said for him, like it, at the start of fall camp, it felt like it felt like learning how to write with your opposite hand all of a sudden. And within mm-hmm. 4 weeks, apparently he's pretty good at cursive. the right side is what he was natural at coming into high school. So it's something that coming into college. So it's something that he's at least familiar with.
Yeah.
I'm sure every offensive lineman has a little bit of like that ego to them of like wanting to be the starting left tackle, that sort of guy. But, I don't think it will be a huge issue for him because like his adaptability more than anything else at Oregon is like what made him stand out just like from, you know, even at like in a specific play level to just like how he was able to like kind of like adapt to within the program, especially with those older guys on the team.
Okay. That's okay. The other question I had was simply about like his kind of mentality out there. Is he more of an attacker, a guy that's absolutely going to love mauling in the run game, or is he kind of more the patient type where he's I mean, we've seen him be successful at both pass protecting and run blocking, but is there one that maybe you see his style of game in terms of his mentality that fits his style a little bit better?
He's a mauler. He's an attacker. He likes to get out and be aggressive on those. And I mean, and I hate to keep going back to like some of those kind of like screen plays and short passes, but like things like where like he just loves those sort of plays and is seeking out like just basically like a heat seeker out there. So, I'm not super familiar with like what Detroit's new offense is going to be looking like with all your guys' quarterback moves out there and stuff. But, within that short game, like, I mean, he's fantastic in the passing game. He allowed, I think, 2 sacks throughout his entire college career. Like he right. has the patience for that, especially like, you know, he can do that sort of thing, but getting him in plays where he can go on the offensive and get him out in space. And that's where you can really take advantage of what he does.
Well, I want to ask about that, you know, when he does have to play defensive, because obviously in the NFL, he might have to like, you know, hold a pocket for a lot longer. Obviously versus college routes take sometimes long. They like to let their routes develop a little longer. And one of the notes always about Sewell, it was like, again, kind of like the short arms thing. It was like trying to, because we have to have this pros and cons list and we've got to put something here. It was always that Sewell might be a little too aggressive. Is he able to just kind of, you know, how does he does when he, how will he do if he has to like, you know, hold a pocket for like 5 seconds, 7 seconds, however long?
Yeah. And I think that's just something probably like a bit of a natural progression. But like I said, like, I mean, this kid's been bigger and stronger than everyone he's played since he was probably like 12 years old, you know? And so like, I think that he, I think he does take some swings sometimes that maybe he just needs to develop that patience with, and that I think that will just come in time. I mean, like you play a full NFL season, you're probably going to learn that awfully quick if it's something that's a deficiency in your game. So, Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that he could work on. But and granted, like in the college game too, like they get the ball out so quick all the time that like, you know, you just didn't really have like a whole lot of opportunity like to see a whole bunch of that. But it's not something that I'm super concerned about.
This feels odd also, like, just again, you know, it's always the jump from college to NFL. It's like going from high school to college is always kind of going into the bigger pond. And again, just nitpicking here a little bit, because I know, you know, again, from the Pac-12, we saw a defensive tackle on Zurique go to the same team, to the Lions. So obviously there is some defensive players in the Pac-12, but he's no longer going to be the biggest, strongest guy on the field every Saturday when he starts playing on Sunday. Do you think he's going to need to make a little bit of adjustment in that regard?
I'm sure there will be some adjustment. And you know, that's something that the last 3-4 years of the Pac-12, like there hasn't been like a whole lot of like absolutely like elite kind of defensive line players. Like it's not like you're going out to, you know, in the SEC where you're facing two or three of those on every single line every single week. But I mean, that was kind of like a big measuring point for him coming off of his freshman year, was like, okay, you're going into the sophomore year, they're opening against Auburn, and it's like this bit, and that was like Derek Brown was on that team. Like that Auburn front seven was legitimate, and that was honestly probably one of the best games Sewell played in his career. I mean, if you look at his highlight tape, half of his highlights are from that game. And so, I mean, he's been able to match that size in college when given the opportunity, but it wasn't something that he was necessarily tested with week in and week out at the Pac-12 level.
Last one for me before we talk maybe a little bit of Jamar Jefferson to close things out. Do you have a play in particular of Sewell's career that you're like, that's the guy that you're getting, Detroit Lions fans?
I mean, I'm sorry I already brought it up, but it would have to be that Stanford one from a couple of years ago where it's been pretty gift or gift on Oregon Twitter throughout the year. So I'm sure you'd be able to find it, but it's just impressive. Like, just like how much it looks like he just wants to destroy the kid that he's running through the back end of the end zone. And that just really kind of set the tone for like what Oregon's offense did that year. It's just like physical, like we're coming after you. So it would definitely have to be that one.
Fair enough. And because you do cover Oregon football, I did want to at least just touch on Jamar Jefferson, the Lions' seventh round pick who did play for Oregon State, and I know was kind of a thorn in Oregon's side a couple times. Could you just kind of give a quick overall impression of Jamar Jefferson's game? Because I think of all the Lions draft picks, that's one that maybe was a little bit of a head scratcher, but now the Lions are reportedly waiving Kerryon Johnson, so he might be, you know, part of the team in 2021.
And to set this table on Jamar Jefferson, because I know we had just heard from some of our friends over at the SB Nation blog for the Oregon Ducks as well, from Addicted to Quack. Mm-hmm. I forget what was her name, but she said the same thing about Jamar Jefferson, that huge thorn in Oregon side.
He has a big old chip on his shoulder. He wasn't well recruited coming out of high school. He played at Oregon State, which, I mean, is often very much overshadowed by Oregon, like even in the years where Oregon State's able to upset him. And so he runs like that, and gosh, did he just destroy Oregon like this year? I mean, physical guy, fast guy. His freshman year, I thought he was a top three running back in the Pac-12 his freshman year, like as a true freshman from the get out. And this was a kid that not a whole lot of people had heard about. He was banged up as his sophomore year, and it kind of just felt, and it wasn't like a serious, like, he's out for the season type of injury. It was just something that like limited him and cost him a few games. And so like, it was kind of like, Jamar Jefferson's probably like fell off a little bit. And then he comes back last year, and he was just, I mean, that kid runs violent for I think when I wrote a profile on him, I think I described it as like a cannonball, but like he's just got breakaway speed, and he runs physical for a guy that's not like a super huge back. And so, yeah, he was a very important part of everything Oregon State did last year. And when he went for like, what was it, like 275 or 300 or something against Oregon last year in the rivalry game, that was the most rushing yards Oregon's allowed since Ezekiel Elliott in like 2014. So
that's quite a stat. That's Tyson Alger from The Athletic covering the Oregon Ducks. You can follow him at Tyson Alger on Twitter. Let me leave the stage to you. Anything that Lions fans might be interested in reading of yours, or where else they can catch you?
You know, Oregon's got more players that might be drafted in future years. So if you want to check it out at The Athletic, I'm just, I think you can just pull it up on the Oregon page, but I don't know. There's a lot of people that do good things on that site. So, I mean, just an overall plug for The Athletic.
I know I have a subscription and I would absolutely recommend it to you as well. But until next time, we're going to close things up there. Thank you for listening. Next week, hopefully we'll do a podcast on Levi Onwuzurike as we continue our Lions draft series here on First Bite. But until next time, thanks for joining us. It's Chaos. Be kind.